to meet with the committee and things, especially because she made the request herself to meet with the committee. Please allow me as well to note the and welcome our chairperson for environmental affairs, Honorable Delang, members of this committee who are here. Honorable members, we are cognizant of the fact that you've left your other commitments to attend this very important meeting. This, of course, is as much an critical issue for you as the committee as it is for us. Our work on this important conference is and also other representatives of other governments that are here. I've seen a lady from the Japanese embassy. Welcome, ma'am. If I left out anybody, please, I beg your fair indulgence. Honorable members, we have three apologies. An apology from Honorable General Holomisa, couldn't make it. We have another one from Honorable Nihu Drukhan and Honorable Ngonyama, who also could not make it to today's meeting. Now, let me please request the Honorable Members that when we engage, please be mindful of the time constraints, because we would not want to leave late tonight. If at all it's possible, Minister, we'll be looking at around 7 to finish, if at all possible. Right. Please, I've omitted welcoming the DG, ever present face in our committee, when he's around. Thank you very much, DG. For being here, and of course those that you from your staff who are here to support you. Thank you very much, honourable members. It's not for me to say a lot today. Let me please allow me to hand the floor over to the minister, who will brief us on the first point is the preparations for COP17. Thank you so much, Minister.
Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation, Honorable Chair of the Environment and Water Affairs, the Honorable Chair of the Steering Committee, Director General and Senior Government Officials present here from both DIA and DIPCO, Director General of DIPCO, as I said, and other officials from the two departments and our other guests, the Consul General of the USA and the Japanese Consul General and other members of the diplomatic corps present here, and ladies and gentlemen of the media. Chair, in opening our contribution this afternoon, we want to take this opportunity to heartily thank each and every one of the honorable members in this room. Thank you for your support in having managed to carry this very difficult task thus far in a period less than 8 months to help prepare South Africa to receive the world in Durban. Honorable Chair and members, in less than 3 weeks, South Africa will once again be the focus of the world when we host the about 20,000 or more than 20,000 of people from all over the world for the 17th Conference of Parties and the convention, the UNFCCC meeting in Durban. You will be aware, honorable members, that South Africa is participating in this event as a party in the negotiations, as well as the host and president of the conference. So Honorable Minister Malewa has been leading us in executing the role of the leader of the South African delegation, while the Minister of TICO has to chair the proceedings of COP7, playing the latter role. We have, through the instruction of our president, established an interministerial committee, or an IMC, that works on this matter. And amongst the members of the IMC, we also have Honorable Minister Trevor Manuel, who's participating in this as a representative of the of Africa on the Transitional Committee for the envisaged Green Climate Fund. I thought it was important to just again, once again, remind ourselves of this three very, very important roles that we all have to play together with all of us in the room. The global awareness on the threat posed by human-induced climate change to our planet and civilization began in the late 1970s, culminating in the adoption of the UNFCCC, which entered into force in 1994, ironically the year of our freedom. This convention established a secretariat, very uniquely, not based in New York, but in Bonn, and provided for an annual meeting of parties known as COP, therefore referred to as the Conference of Parties. Kyoto Protocol, established in terms of the UNFCCC, which was adopted in 1997 and entered into force in 2005, commits some developed countries known as members of the Annex One countries to emission reductions obligations. In terms of this protocol, the first commitment period for those countries expires in 2012. A new commitment period must be negotiated and agreed to if the Kyoto Protocol is to have any relevance in the future, and this is what is at stake in Durban. The Kyoto Protocol also provides for an annual conference of parties. So what will take place in Durban on is the 17th Conference of Parties to the convention and the 7th Conference of Parties serving as the meeting of parties to Kyoto Protocol. We have said that COP17 must be an African COP. When I say we, I mean all Africans. By this we mean three things: that the conference should be leveraged to advance African issues on sustainable development in general and climate change in particular, showcase Africa's success on sustainable development, including our green projects, and harvest international partnerships for Africa's green initiatives, especially with respect to mobilize the necessary means of implementation in the form of finance, technology, and capacity building, focusing largely on adaptation and how Africa, LDCs, and the seed would be assisted to adapt to these new realities that were brought about by climate change. As we prepare for this important global event, we have concentrated our efforts in the main the following three areas as the host country, namely logistics, substance, build-up, and communication and outreach. On logistics, we have an interdepartmental team, including the KZN province and Etiopian municipality, leading us in this area. We continue to monitor risks in this area, but in the main, we are happy with our state of readiness. You'll be aware, honorable members, of our website as well as the logo and the slogan of the conference, Working Together, Saving Tomorrow Today. The 2010 FIFA World Cup experience has prepared our cities for hosting events of this magnitude. On substance, where we think there is a risk lie the fact that the COP is a party-led process. Parties negotiate from the standpoint of their sovereignty and national interests, which are not always in sync with each other. This articulation of North-South and developed and developing countries divide comes out sharply in some instances here. Within each of the developing and developed countries categories are other groupings that each participating in negotiations to extract concessions that will further what is sometimes conflicting interests. South Africa is participating in this configuration of the forces through Honorable Minister Mlewa in the BASIC, which is basically Brazil, South Africa, India, and China grouping, G77 plus China. Let's go back quickly to the BASIC. It's not a formal negotiating grouping, but it's a grouping of emerging economies that think they are like-minded, but also that consolidate consensus for a positive outcome of such gatherings. The G77 plus China is a historic grouping that we know in the UN systems. AMCHEN is the African Ministers of Environment grouping. The African Union, I'm sure you all know about it, but in this particular case, there's also a special grouping of heads of states, or who are about eight, led by Prime Minister Meles, who also work in coordination with AMCHEN, or the African Ministers of Environment grouping. Our approach as the COP presidency followed a three-phase approach. Early this year, we went on a listening campaign, meeting and talking to parties without pronouncing a specific view, because that's what COP meetings dictate, that as the president or incoming president, you can't have your own opinion, but whatever opinion or positions are formed by members of the party, and there's a slogan that they use in these negotiations of under the UNFCCC called PDP, Party-Driven Process. So after listening to the parties, we started in the second phase to pronounce to the other groupings on what we hear from the others as to what we think will be a consolidated outcome for Durban. At the last intersectional meeting on the formal negotiation forum in Panama in September, which was the third phase, we started calling on parties to develop texts on which negotiations in Durban will be based. We're happy to report that our plea did not fall on deaf ears. We are going to Durban with texts in most of the negotiation tracks, including a report with recommendations on the transitional committee, which would help us move towards the formation of the Green Climate Fund. Our three-phase approach had paid off. Our credibility is still intact. By credibility, I mean the mandate derived for the incoming COP president in the main presentation that I think has been distributed to you, and I'm trying to not go page by page because of time constraints, actually highlights the key mandate of the incoming presidency as mandated by the Cancun Agreement, that which mandated us to make sure that the COP17 becomes a platform where there's openness, where there's consolidation of trust, where there's fairness, where there's a consolidation of a multilateralism and integrity of the processes that that underpin the UNFCCC, but also taking into consideration all the aspirations of developing and developed LDCs and small islands and developing countries. Now, from Bangkok, this intersectional or formal negotiation process went to Bonn, and from Bonn, intersectional session before the formal negotiations start in Durban on the 28th of November, we went to Panama. That's where drafts started emerging from facilitators mandated by the negotiators and the ministers themselves. Now, our three-phase approach, as I said, has paid up. And as I have said now, I need to reiterate that we think that our credibility is still intact because we try to live by the rules and expectations. This is important because the success of Durban will, in many respects, depend on the confidence and trust that parties have on the co-presidency of South Africa. There are two competing visions of what should come out of Durban, even though the gap is now beginning to narrow down. One vision wants to limit Durban's focus to the operationalization of what came out of COP6. The other, and Cancun agreement or outcomes of last year. The other wants Durban to focus on both, and I repeat, both outcomes of the Cancun and the finalization of matters still outstanding from the Bali roadmap. In this context, there are a number of messages we are hearing from parties. And tapping the list is the second commitment of Kyoto, and indeed the operationalization of what came out of the Cancun outcomes or agreements, and the conclusion of issues still outstanding from the Bali roadmap. Africa is singled out, as I said earlier, on adaptation as a key highlight of what should come out of Durban. Therefore, in Durban, we will have to work hard to close gaps among the parties on this key issue. Honorable members, as mandated by the Cancun outcomes or agreements, South Africa is the incoming COP7, undertook a number of informal consultations which I've already referred to. And I think I can just quickly list the meetings that we have had at the ministerial level. One was a joint meeting in Germany, which we hosted with the Germans, followed by one meeting which we hosted in Pretoria. And in September, we had a leaders' dialogue meeting, which we co-hosted with the presidency of Mexico. This was a high-level dialogue on climate change headed by President Zuma and President Calderon. And we have just recently held another meeting, the traditional pre-COP meeting, of ministerial meeting on the 20th and 21st of October here in Cape Town, at Spear. We will give a more detailed account of this meeting in our statement in Parliament tomorrow. But if there are questions, I'm more than keen to answer all the key questions to the members of the committee today. In our interactions with parties, we tried our best to manage expectations. We emphasized in our message the centrality of the country parties, that we don't get together in a difficult situation like this to just re-emphasize national positions. But in UNFCCC processes, it's give and take as long as we maintain the balance and we are seen to remain transparent. So as the incoming co-president, what we say to you is what we hear the party members say, instead of imposing an outcome on the parties. But also we have the responsibility to champion cohesion rather than emphasize on divergence, consolidating an outcome that is fair, balanced, ambitious, but equally realistic. On build-up and outreach, we have been on the roadshow in the country to speak to our constituencies. When I say constituencies, I'm talking about sectoral outreach. The minister responsible to go to constituencies is the leader of the South African delegation. We have spoken to the unions just to listen to them so that when we listen to the inputs of other unions outside the country, federations in particular, we know what they are saying. We've also had to make presentations at NETLEC, where we had an opportunity to listen to business, to civil society, because there will be a very strong presence of civil society through the C17, but also the use of government. So, honorable members, through the chair, we are happy that we think we are making progress in Durban, for Durban. But we know that in terms of substance, Durban is not going to be an easy COP, because all the difficult political issues that should have been discussed in Cancun have not been. So they are all coming to Durban. We must do our best to get the parties to find each other on the future of Kyoto Protocol as an agreement on this point, or lack of it will affect progress on the other negotiation tracks. Here we must work on parties that are key to the deal. Our work must be at all levels, reaching a consensus among the 194 party members is not going to be easy, but we need to continue trying. A lot of work still needs to be done in the preparations for COP7, particularly that which is being demanded by other stakeholders, that as we propagate, or as other developing countries propagate for the second commitment of Kyoto, we must also start begin a discussion in Durban that looks at the future, because Kyoto alone cannot sort out all the problems that are facing us on climate change and greenhouse gases emissions. But also an agreement that excludes other major parties would be a futile exercise. So we need all parties to find space and feel accommodated with or by the outcomes of Durban. So other party members are beginning to talk about Kyoto Plus. That is, yes, the second commitment of Kyoto, but also let's begin the discussions about the future framework in Durban, even if the actual negotiations themselves will not begin in Durban. There's also a discussion around the importance of making sure that we've established the Green Climate Fund by Durban. And beyond Durban, then we must start consolidating our discussions around sources of funding. So next, as I said earlier on, is issues around mitigation and adaptation, and for Africans, adaptation very, very important. Now, Durban's outcomes should provide a platform from where the strengthening of the full, effective, and sustained implementation of the convention through a comprehensive multilateral rule-based system on climate change, enforceable and equally binding on all beyond 2020, can be achieved. A decision in Durban should focus on how stronger implementation can happen now, as well as deciding on the future direction, as I've said earlier on. For the now part, the suggested outcome and anticipated of the second commitment period would be what both developing and developing countries, and majority developing countries, think is essence. Because the gap between the first and second commitment, if it occurs, it's going to create serious problems for us. For the future, part of the outcome, as I said earlier on, all parties will collectively have to do more, but based on the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and capabilities, developed countries have to continue taking their historic lead. And I'm sure developed countries know exactly by what I mean by the historical need to continue leading, informed by the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and capabilities. Even though, honorable members through the chair, the UNFCCC process is of the state, the role of civil society is a factor that cannot be ignored. We have established a capacity dedicated to interaction with the sector of our people. As I said earlier on, I'd refer to them as what UNFCCC process referred to them as the C-17. Civil society shares our concern about the threat posed by human-caused climate change, and like us, they want to see from states bold and ambitious action, and to them, they actually say urgently. They actually overall would want Durban to succeed. Media is another constituency whose role is critical now and will be in Durban. We have been working together with the Editors Forum to run workshops, to continue educating each other of each other's role as we move towards Durban. Chair, and honorable members, Parliament is an institution and yourselves, members, as distinguished leaders in our communities, would continue to make invaluable contribution in the areas of climate change. We are aware of the good work being done by Parliament in this respect. However, we believe that working together, we can do more in the fight against climate change. As Parliament, you can leverage on your global reach to reinforce the message of what should come out of Durban. You have good and active relations with countries whose role in Durban will be critical to the deal there. Honorable members, I do not need to emphasize the importance of climate change to our national interests, including our quest for a better life here at home, in Africa, and abroad. This is an issue about development and sustainable development. As I said, based on the outcome of Durban, that would be common but differentiated responsibility and respective capabilities is central to the principles of the UNFCCC. Climate change is a component of sustainable development. It is about finding a balance between the imperatives of socio-economic development and meeting the needs of our people on one hand and protecting our environment on the other. One African elder says, we have not inherited the world from our forebears, but we have borrowed it from our children who are the future or our future. Our sister department here has just released our white paper detailing our national response to climate change, and I'm sure as honorable members you are engaged with that process, and the little I've heard from other countries, particularly in the informal ministerial sessions, is that the white paper has been generally well received. I don't have a mandate to elaborate on that, but I'm just sharing with you what I'm hearing as a neutral incoming president of the COP. We're clear in our minds that there's a link between COP17, Rio Plus 20, and the biodiversity meeting that will follow in India. So we are saying that from the historic Earth Summit that took place in Rio in 1992, we moved on to the formation of the UNFCCC, and we converged again in South Africa in 2002 in the Rio Plus 10. We will, after COP17, COP7, be moving to Rio again for a Rio Plus 20, which has a direct linkage and impact of the from the outcome of the of COP17, and will also have an impact on the following biodiversity meeting that will take place in India. Chair, I will pause here and once again thank you most heartily for having given me this opportunity. In the presentation, we also have attempted to talk to the outline of the state of readiness. On your presentation, I think the page 9 of the presentation, page 9, logistical arrangements for hosting the Durban conference are now at an advanced stage. We actually have a meeting, the IMC meeting this morning, to continue to get an update on that. We've done the needful. We've signed the host country agreement in Panama in October. The UNFCCC secretariat is currently relocating to Durban on an incremental basis. We have launched the official website of the conference. The Inkosi Albert Luthuli Convention Center is the official venue of the conference. Hotel accommodation and arrangements for visiting delegations are at an advanced stage, and they have started booking, making payments, the delegates. And assistance is also required, as it is the norm, for LDCs, financial assistance for LDCs and the seats. Transport requirements are detailed, and detailed plans are also there. Security plans are at an advanced stage. All accredited UNFCCC delegates will enjoy free visa entry into South Africa. Media and communication stream is also in place. And in conclusion, the view of the presidency is that we think we're going to have a very difficult but an achievable positive outcome in Durban with your support. I thank you once again, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Honourable Members, there's the briefing. It's for you to interrogate and engage. Honourable Mubu. Thank you, Madam Minister, for the briefing. It's good to see you again after a long time. We, in this committee, always say we miss you. You're like an absentee husband who only shows up once in a while. But it's nice that you have come to brief us on this. For many of us, this is a very technical conference. And I heard you alluding to the fact that your partner department has undertaken to educate the people, the stakeholders, on the importance of this conference. But I just want to find out to what extent has your department sent out this message to the people of South Africa to understand just what this conference is all about. Secondly, is there any united African or coherent African message that or voice that you want to bring to this conference? And if there is, what would it be? Thirdly, we know that conferences of this nature always attract a lot of protests. Large groups of people come not as participants in the sense of being delegates to the conference, but they want to bring the message to the participants, and sometimes in a violent manner. I have seen this happening in other countries. To what extent is this government prepared to handle this? Two more points and then I'll stop. What is the government's financial contribution to this, if you have any figures? But lastly, what do you see as the most positive outcome of this conference for our image as a country, particularly following the fallout from the events of the past few weeks, the Dalai Lama issue, the Libyan issue? Do you think this is an opportunity for this country to repair this image that we sort of the image that suffered from these events? And if so, how do you hope to approach that? Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. We'll take Honourable Dudley and Honourable Mukhala.
Thank you. It happens that my questions are along a similar line, but I'm going to express them the way I would want to hear them. And that is, what is the key message to the South African public regarding what COP17 means to them? Sort of, what is at stake for South Africa? Have we put in simple words anyway how South Africa and Africa will benefit or not benefit, short and long term, from this particular convention? Does our white paper on climate change impact in any way on COP17? And if so, how? And will we see any protests manifesting? Are we prepared? Have we done our research in terms of what might be sitting in the wings for us?
Honourable Mukhalapa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me echo the sentiments of my colleagues here and welcome the Minister. Welcome, Minister. It's been a long time since we've been with you. And thank you for briefing us and giving us a report. Just three concerns that I would like to raise with you, Madam Minister. The first one is the issue of, you've referred to the issue of political issues. What is your contingency plan in making sure that you address the issue of political issues? Because you've said clearly that in Cancun they were defected to Durban. And what will be those issues, and what is your projection of how you're going to deal with those issues? The second one, you have referred to the issue of sectoral outreach and you've referred to a couple of them, like the unions and ECLEC and civil society and government. How did you package that message to make sure that they come up with one voice? Because of often these sectors have got different opinions about how to approach these issues. And the third one is the issue of using BASIC as a negotiating forum. How did you use BASIC to try and influence the outcome in as far as, you know, making an impact towards the AU, as my colleague has already alluded in saying that what is the AU message on this one? But how have you used BASIC as a negotiating forum to make sure that you have a coherent, because of, I think you have mentioned one word, you said you are trying to push for coherence in this. How did you manage to achieve that? Thanks, Chair.
So thank you very much. Honourable members, I'll have the Minister respond to some of those questions. Please, the Honourable members and the chairpersons from the other committees, please participate at will. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Let me say to all the Honourable members again that it's always good to be home and interact with your good selves. The outreach program of the income COP presidency would be at two levels. As I said, there is a larger portion of it that has to be done by the leader of the South African delegation. Our sectoral outreach goes to sectors. As one of our honorable members here, Honorable Mkhalapa and Ngwe said, to make sure that we consolidate that which unites South Africans and not that which divides us, because we are the hosts. And I'll come back to that point because it has been repeated by several honorable members here. Yes, there is an African position, informed by a special resolution adopted by the Malabo Summit, which dedicated time specifically on South Africa's hosting of COP17, COPMOP7. The heads of states of Africa have said, all in unison, they want to support a positive outcome for Durban, and they will do all in their power to make sure that we have a successful COP17, COPMOP7. African leaders have said that they would want the international community, the party members, to come to Durban to extend mandate for Kyoto through the second committee of Europe. They've said that we need to bring back the issues that have been highlighted by the Bali Roadmap and Action Plan back on the table of negotiations, but key on of those outcomes is the second commitment period. Second, they said key for them, the positive outcomes of Cancun, as much as it managed to avoid the political issues, the key political issue is the second commitment period, with all that comes with it. If the second commitment for Kyoto does not happen, it means that the developed countries will also have to suffer, because there are measures, there are issues, there are measures that they were benefiting from, particularly on carbon trade, particularly also the issues around other major developing countries. But for developing countries, we will lose out the support and support mechanisms that came with the mechanisms that are under the Kyoto. In Kyoto, even countries like the US that had not ratified Kyoto Protocol, there was a mechanism where in which countries under Annex 1 could also still be contributing in a verifiable manner as to what are they doing to make sure that they help us mitigate and adapt. This is the only legal framework, the legal instrument, not framework. Kyoto Protocol is the only legal instrument that we have under the convention. But if you lose it, in the language of one woman from the NGO sector or the civil society sector, that it's like a decision by leaders to say, here is a big river that we have to cross. But because this bridge is becoming rickety and old, let's burn it. In the meantime, while we are building a very strong bridge, whose project will be overseen by very knowledgeable engineers, in the meantime, we'll swim through to cross the river, and those who can't swim, I'm sure they're going to drown. And then, because we are building the new bridge, which we don't have at the moment, many have thought it's better to use the rickety bridge, strengthen it, while you are thinking of building this new one that's going to be very good. That's why when you talk of the what from the parties are saying is that let's use the second commitment period between now and the future, and what we mean by the future, that informed by science and the scientific report that will come between 2013 and 2015 of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on the Convention, they will give us a report on what science informs us, whether we are making progress. We know we think we're not making progress, that we might actually be moving closer to passing the two degrees Celsius of global heating, while the seeds are actually pleading with us that we should be working for a target of 1.5 degrees Celsius. Now, all these things are the political issues that cannot be avoided. That must be discussed, but we can conclude that we have to, as we make this progress, by extending the mandate of Kyoto through the Kyoto Protocol, then be informed gradually, well, in Durban, agree to start discussions around a future framework that will be informed by the scientific report that will come by end of 2013 to 2015, which will help us launch the discussions on the new framework by 2020. So these are the political things that should be linked, not me, but party members are saying, to a successful signing on of the second commitment period on the Kyoto. That's what Africans are also saying. So if you look at the African position, it's not divorced from generally what BASIC is saying, it's not divorced from what the bigger group of the G77 plus China are saying. So that's the common position of Africa. Africans want us to do away with the fragmented approach to adaptation. They want us to adopt an adaptation committee by Durban. That's the mandate we're given, that between Cancun and Durban, we should have a full-fledged adaptation committee that looks at how Africa will adapt to ensure food security, to ensure energy security, and also to ensure availability of potable water for Africans, safe water for Africans. And Africans are not doing this forgetting the interests of the LDCs, because in Africa you have got majority LDCs, but also emerging economies. But Africa also has island states, so we cannot ignore the plight of the seeds, the small island and developing states, who are actually saying on issues of adaptation, for them is more than just adapting and mitigating against climate change. It's more about survival. Because if the global leadership do nothing about this crisis, they think they'll be swept away one day. So adaptation for them means adaptation through survival. So I cannot say that there's a delineation between the African position and the position of the other developing countries. But yes, there's an African position. Protests, yes. South Africa is a democracy. Need to make sure that there's proper security, and as I said in the presentation of state of readiness, our security agencies are ready for the challenge, but in a democratic setting. So South Africa will be one of the few hosts that have allowed a formal march, which will take place from, is it, Carrefour to the venue of the conference on the 3rd of December. We are expecting about 15,000 demonstrators to march to the convention center, the venue of the summit. Finance, we have a budget that was dedicated to the hosting of this meeting. There were funds that were transferred from DIA to DICO, and I think all in all, we had a budget of about 400 million, and we had a shortfall of about 90 million, which we think we can work around, because, as I said earlier on, between the host country and other, and the UN agencies, there's a reality that the UNFCCC process is not FIFA World Cup. You are going to have countries whose economies are not that big enough, but they cannot then be disenfranchised. So the UN has to help support these small countries that they also have a hearing. Remember I said this is a party-driven process. The UN is the father and mother of big and small. So we are trying to reach out as possible as we can. Positive image for South Africa. South Africa has not lost any positive image. In fact, the image of this country is now as much as it's an opportunity as it is a matter that says, because you're South Africa, there's no way you can avoid the political issues that were put aside by other countries. Because you are a country of miracles, help us bring back even these difficult issues. Because you are a free and fair and constructive politically and in the international platform, make us achieve all the things that we have put here. That we come up with a fair, balanced, ambitious, but realistic outcome in Durban. I will say the other political things that have nothing to do with climate change at the moment for the right moment. I've already responded to what Honorable Makgalapa referred to as the political issues. I think I've done that. Feedback from the sectoral outreach, South Africans and the sectoral outreach. Remember, the sectoral outreach we do is not only in South Africa, in the continent, but also the ones that we meet and informal meetings that we've had globally. Largely from the developing world are the key issues that I've highlighted already. They are not different from what we're hearing. In South Africa in particular, the unions in particular were talking about just transition. How do we migrate from the brown economy to the green economy? The answer lies in how do developed countries, as they promised, support our adaptation mechanisms, because that's what they promised. When we signed on the accord, was based on the fact that we will get, it was conditioned on us getting the support that was promised, which brought about also the TC that said, even before the formation of the Green Climate Fund, the TC, the Transitional Committee, had a pledge from developed countries that from 2010 to 2012, I'm giving an example, developed countries will contribute $10 billion per annum, in total $30 billion between 2010 to 2012, which gives room for the formation and establishment, a full establishment of the Green Climate Fund and sources of funding by end of 2012. From our assessment, it might be that this transitional committee and what is popularly known as the Fast Start Fund, the $30 billion that I've referred to, will have to be extended way beyond 2012 as we wait for the full establishment and the sources of funding thereof of the Green Climate Fund. So what we are hearing is how do we gradually move from the brown economy to the green economy, and how do we get assisted to make sure that we don't shed many jobs, but also that as much as we are a developing country, we remain a responsible member of the global citizenry. That, as I said earlier on in the presentation, we have a responsibility to respond to our national priorities, at the same time remembering that we have not inherited this earth from our forebears, but we are holding it in trust for the future generations. Hence our motto for the conference that says, we are saving tomorrow, today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Honorable members, I'll give you a last bite. Any question, Honorable September? Honorable Nchikelana?
Thank you, Chair. Two issues. The first one is, what lessons can be drawn from the process that we had at the WTO and the kind of messages that we were able to get through at the WTO, but we all know what happened thereafter, and it's not been spoken about, and whether at all there would be any attempt to have a spillover of those agenda items at the WTO trying to get into this coming session. And then the second one would be, I hope I'm right here, but one is not seeing enough of our own campaign being, the intensification of our own campaign here at home sufficiently coming through. Is there any other program that is coming through that, our main messages is the aspect of adaptation, mitigation. Our main message is the fact that we want technologies, we want the funding thing to happen. So I'd like to know whether that is so, and I will probably continue to ask. There must be more tree planting leading up between now and the actual dates, and from Durban to Cape Town to all these, getting very many of us involved in just symbolically doing this thing and finding relevant sites to go everywhere. There can't be a difficulty. Sandparks is there with very many indigenous trees that they have. So I really want to plead if we want to put forward a visible face of adaptation and mitigation on tree planting in a massive way. There's enough days to do that and beyond also. Thanks.
Honorable Jikelana.
Thank you very much, Chair. Also, let me thank the Minister for her valuable input. It actually reinforces quite a number of issues that have been running in my mind, and I'm sure some of us as well here in Parliament. Through you, Chair, Minister, I'm sure, although we may have been updated from time to time, let me take this opportunity and still reinforce that we've been trying our best as well in Parliament to contribute. We've run a couple of workshops for members so that they can understand what we're talking about. And in all these workshops, in varying forms, we've always done our best to involve both departments. I'm sure you've been told about that, so that we are kept abreast, or what we say resonates with issues that are being handled. We don't move off the tangent. And even recently, we held a seminar just to see if we can contribute to some national consensus of some sort. And once again, we had both departments, contributing there. And I think it should be put on record that that was our attempt to reinforce. And one looks even at this meeting today as a reinforcement that, and it resonates, quite a number of things that I think resonate with that. And by the way, also C17 participated in that seminar. And we'll be sharing through your office and the DG's office the what we regard as a declaration coming out of that. It's almost 90% complete, if not completely done. Also, as someone who's part of the international community, we're doing our best to link up with the Pan-African Parliament, which is our contribution to the Colindela Drive. Although late, but there is Dunadaren of the Pan-African Parliament to work together towards COP17 and, of course, even beyond. One area I'd like to highlight strongly is that of awareness campaign. Quite a number of us in the steering committee for climate change have already started that, and we've held a couple of interviews over the radio, which is one part. But what is most important is that at this stage in time, with the assistance of the UNDP, we're developing a toolkit for all parliamentarians, which will be used at constituency level as an awareness tool. Of course, for those who work on the ground, I'd like to emphasize that, those who work on the ground. But I'd like to link that to you, Chair, that it would be helpful if you can ensure, and I'm sure Mamlewa could come in and delegate someone to make sure that the both departments, particularly with you now, are exposed to that toolkit, so that we can show whatever is included there. You know, it's things that you would have loved to see parliamentarians, you know, articulating to the ordinary people, because that's the same thing that we're doing. So we need to hold in hands very, very strongly there. Chair, the last point is that of Minister, you made mention of outstanding issues in the Bali roadmap. Do you mind if you could share with us what those outstanding issues are? Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Njigalana. Honorable members, any other contribution from your good selves? Okay. I'll hand over to the Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think from the question raised by Honorable Member September, what lessons have we learned from the WTO? I think from the WTO process, we can say we have learned what not to do. Meaning, multilateralism die if we say we are going to a UN-led negotiation process to just go to re-emphasize our national positions. If there's no give and take, then we kill multilateralism. And this is not in the interest of both the developed and developing countries. One lesson learned from the WTO process is that in this current economic and financial meltdown, the Doha development round, if it was concluded by now, it will be helping us navigate and mitigate against the current global economic situation. But as we are delving into this and battling with it, as economies collapse, the Doha round is also, development round has also been, you know, held in one position, for lack of a better diplomatic term. So I would say that from WTO, I think we should learn what not to do. And as you rightfully said, we are beginning to see also in desperation, because there's a linkage, because I said climate change issues are also really about development. So those who are not getting answers from the WTO are beginning to think they must fast track their issues through this process of the UNFCCC. But UNFCCC can't sort out even trade issues alone. WTO still has to do its part. South Africa is a developing country that believes in multilateralism, would make sure that through this multilateralism and its integrity thereof need to be preserved. If you lose this, the international community and leadership thereof lose credibility. And this is the time when we cannot afford to fail. I've heard honourable members, September and Njigelem, emphasising that we can never have enough awareness campaigns. I think what we should also be saying, and I can share this with you, that from Bolivia to, I don't know where else I've not been to. In Bolivia, they believe in saving Pachamama, Mother Earth. That's where they base their policies around, save Pachamama, Mother Earth. From Bolivia to Vanuatu, to Kenya, to South Africa, including in China, some governments have even formed and separate climate change ministries or departments, because awareness can help us mitigate faster as we help developing countries to adapt to the new realities that we have. Those who know better say we are beginning to reap the negative impacts of the rapid industrial revolution of 200 years past today. So unless we do something together, both developed and developing countries today, it means the next coming 200 years will be worse. So awareness campaigns should actually start, if one may be blunt, to say South Africa, UNFCCC Convention came into force in 1994. Now, South Africa, USA, big and small, that's what I'm trying to say. We have to keep working on awareness campaigns, all of us. Globally, the leadership should never think we've had enough of that. May Wangari Maathari, may her soul rest in peace, tried a bit in Kenya, but also encouraged people of the world on this program of tree planting. I know that the Department of Environment and Water Affairs are trying their best, but all of us in this room are leaders in our own right. This is a self-inflicted claim. It's a man-made disaster, and only men can help reverse it. It's not going to happen overnight. So awareness campaigns must not start on the eve of Durban and end on the 10th of December. We all have to keep on education, awareness campaigns, supported by actual practical action on the ground. But also on the bigger scale, encouraging developing countries also do their bit, while the developed also live up to the commitments that keeps the integrity of multilateralism. The principle of common but differentiated responsibility and capabilities cannot be overemphasized. That's one of the outcomes of Bali, Honorable Njigelem. The commitment of the developed countries on what they will be doing to help us mitigate. We need to go back to the drawing board. And also, the undertakings made by developing countries that as they are assisted to adapt, they also do their bit to mitigate. But the major responsibility lies in with those who have had an opportunity to develop unfettered for the past 200 years before science warned us that if we go at the pace we are going, we will be in trouble. So that's why I have emphasized that one of the political outcomes that is needed to be revisited is the second commitment period of the Kyoto, which is one of the outcomes of the Bali Roadmap and Action Plan. I've tried my best to even refer to the old lady's analogy of a bridge. These are the political issues that we didn't spend time on, but we're kept on the side because of the difficulties we were met with in Copenhagen. We appreciate the role that honorable members have played in bringing awareness even at the PAP or through the Pan-African Parliament. I want to confirm that the UNDP toolkit, we have also similarly made such requests to the UNDP, we had also encouraged them to work with you. As a UN agency, we have encouraged them to do that. They've also designed a toolkit for the media. As I said, we're working in partnership with the Editors Forum. I am not ashamed to say this because I know that even in China and many of the countries that have been big and small, the education actually has to start with our media. Because those are the people who influence the thinking in the society. I know there's no off the record in a meeting like this. But one not so old man, the old ones understand climate change. But some person my age who was claiming to know and understand this thing said, this thing is like the story of Unungawuse. Doesn't mean anything. But it's more than Unungawuse story. It's a reality. So I won't elaborate. Chair has not given me the mandate to talk about Unungawuse, but those who read this thing say understand what I'm talking about. Have I not answered all the questions, Chair? Okay.
No, thank you very much. No, indeed you have, Honorable Minister. Honorable members, members look saturated by the information. Everybody looks quite happy. I think it's the first time. Perhaps it has to do with your presence today. Honorable members just look so happy. Of course, the honorable member is not a member of the committee,
okay.
So understand. Honorable Jigelana, you'll be the last one.
Yeah, for all our sins, together with you, Chair. Yes, you're the chair of the Portfolio Committee for International Relations and Cooperation, but for all our sins being in the Steering Committee for Climate Change, that's why I'm raising my hand again. I think it's worth just confirming through you, Chair Minister, that maybe we're very sensitive to time. That quite a number of issues that you've raised once again. We've handled them through the Steering Committee in various forms. And they get confirmed or, to a less extent, get challenged, in various platforms. Because just last week, myself, together with the chair and others, we had a tour, of the UK Parliament and the Scottish Parliament with nothing else but to exchange ideas and views on climate change issues. Not that we were handling the COP17. We did our best to avoid that. But the issue that we raised there, once again, resonate the fact that, we should uphold the principle of, equal but differentiated responsibilities, The other thing is, also, from my experience as being formerly part of the Pan-African Parliament, one is very, very much aware of the importance of advancing the African Common Position. It's there, even at the previous seminar, it was raised because we are part of Africa and we are part of it. And it's a position that has been reinforced in Malabo, and one can say. Chair, I just felt, because there's some time, it is worth just highlighting that be aware that, we are alert and we've been seized by those issues. And fortunately, we are in legislature, so we do our best to use our platforms to advance those issues wherever we are and ensure that more than anything, this country will provide the requisite leadership at Tekwini. As from the last week of this month until early next month.
No, thank you very much. Perhaps just in conclusion, yes, indeed, we at the seminar engaged on a range of issues. Suffice it to say, for the purposes of this meeting, that we have indeed affirmed as a parliament, but also as various organizations that took place in that seminar, affirmed our support for our country position to look at ways as well in terms of how we could consolidate that position going forward. But of course, that also included the African Common Position. And we're looking at ways of engaging, you know, in conducting parliamentary diplomacy going forward, in terms of how we could, in our engagements with other parliaments, really consolidate and expand our expand support for our position. We've dealt with issues of mitigation and adaptation. We dealt with the issues of financing. We've dealt with the issues of the transfer of technologies, which we believe, as our government does, that these are the cornerstones, in terms of the entire climate change debate that really needs to be looked at. And of course, the operationalization of the Bali roadmap, especially on those issues. So broadly, Minister, we have reaffirmed our support broadly for the country position now. I can confidently say that we've had the support from across all sectors in society around these issues. We will be having a global parliamentary forum that will be taking place later. We have the IPU, where we'll be engaging with other parliamentarians around the world in pursuing the African Common Position on these in conducting parliamentary diplomacy, of course, mindful of the fact that we are not negotiators and we are not diplomats. We are parliamentarians that have a broad mandate in pursuing our country's strategic objectives in tandem with that of Africa as a continent. So cognizant, of course, of the fact that we are part of the global world. So I thought I should just, just give you a broad peek into these issues. I don't know if there any last word from you.
Well, I think the last word, Honorable Chair, and the other chairs in the room, and Honorable Members, is just to once again heartily thank Team South Africa through Parliament, and say once again, we have borrowed this earth from the future generations. We are holding it in trust for them. So we also have to make our handful contributions there. So I just want to say, working together, indeed we can save tomorrow, today. South Africa also has a role to play in making that dream a reality. Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the contributions and the hard work and the interactions of this committee, the Committee on Environment and Water Affairs, and the Steering Committee on Climate Change. Let's journey together to Durban. Remember, in earnest, that's when the presidency of South Africa starts, in Durban. The whole of 2012, until we hand over to the next chair of presidency, we are the incoming president and will become the president of the COP from the 28th of November. So we are not going to Durban to finish the job, but we are going to Durban to start the job. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That resonated with a lot of members. I saw smiles all over. Thank you, Honorable Members. Let's go to the next point of the agenda, the delivery outcome agreement of the minister of the department with the president, the minister with the president, in fact. Can I just use this opportunity, because I think some of the honorable members may want to be excused. Please feel free to excuse yourselves. I thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, for your attendance of this meeting. Thank you so much. Oh, okay, it was very tiny. Oh, okay. There are no copies. Oh, okay. No, no, it's fine. No, it's fine. It's no crisis. What we will take the, we will get the briefing. We'll make our notes. If at some point it becomes available, we can then distribute it to members. If at all it becomes available.
May I just ask you a question?
Oh, okay. There are copies. Honourable members, honourable, no, before you distribute, can you just let me adjourn the meeting for 3 minutes. Just stretch your legs. Can I request that the DG sort this issue out of this document here, whether indeed that's the document, or will Mr. Maluka sort it out? While you sort it out, can you stretch our legs for 2-3 minutes?